Iraqi descent who disappeared a week ago and is believed to have been kidnapped. A new audit finds that nearly one out of every 25 weapons bought by the U.S. for Iraqi forces is missing, and that many others can't be repaired because of missing manuals or parts. That's a total of more than 14,000 weapons, including assault rifles, machine guns, semi-automatic pistols, and rocket-propelled grenade launchers. The report was ordered by the Senate Armed Services Committee. Saddam Hussein's top lawyer, who's been boycotting his trial since the chief judge was replaced a month ago, was back in court today, but only briefly, to present a list of 12 demands, including one to investigate the alleged beating of one of the co-defendants by prison guards. In Pakistan, 80 suspected al-Qaeda militants have been killed by missiles fired by Pakistani troops and helicopters at a school near the Afghan border, a school which they say was being used as an al-Qaeda training center. Locals, however, say that a number of those killed were children. In the Gaza Strip today, Palestinian gunmen kidnapped a Spanish humanitarian aid worker, action being condemned by Palestinian authorities, who call the kidnappers criminals and say they're damaging the international image of the Palestinian people. Brazilian President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva has won a landslide victory for a second term. Silva is considered a leftist, but much more moderate than the leaders of either Venezuela or Bolivia. Investigators now studying one of the two black boxes found in a Nigerian passenger jet that crashed in the capital city of Abuja just after takeoff yesterday, killing 96 people. There were 9 survivors. It's the third major airline crash in Nigeria in less than a year. In Washington, D.C., student and faculty protests, which shut down Gallaudet University, are now at an end following the announcement over the weekend that the governing board has withdrawn the appointment of incoming President Jane Fernandez. The news set off celebrations yesterday throughout the campus of the nation's premier college for the hearing impaired. The wildfire burning near Palm Springs, which has already consumed 63 square miles of brush and timber and killed 4 firefighters, now about 85% contained. And legendary basketball coach Red Auerbach, whose Boston Celtics won 16 league championships under his tutelage, including a string of 8 in a row, has died at the age of 89. This is the Quality News Network, Business and Science, coming up next.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
Former Vice President Al Gore, who has devoted much of his time to educating people about the threat of global warming, will soon be advising the British government on climate change. This following a major British report that says global warming, if left unchecked, will devastate the world economy as much as the Great Depression and the World Wars did in the 20th century. Greece is hosting a global summit on the Internet. More than 1,000 delegates from around the world expected to attend the 5-day conference, which begins today. The Commerce Department reports consumer spending was up just 0.1% last month. That's down 0.1% from August, and says that while consumers continue to buy big-ticket items like cars and appliances, they did cut back last month on non-durables like food and clothing. Goodyear Tire and Rubber has announced it's closing a plant in Tyler, Texas, and eliminating 1,100 jobs there. Bounce check and ATM fees are on the rise. A survey of banks in 25 large U.S. cities shows that the average fee for a bounce check is now $27.40. Fees for using ATMs gone up a dime in the past year, from $1.54 to $1.64. And Verizon beat Wall Street expectations by posting a modest rise in quarterly profits on revenues of $23.25 billion. Gold is trading up more than $9 an ounce at this hour at $610.30. Light sweet crude down $1.55 a barrel, trading at $59.20. All the markets are down on Wall Street. The Dow is down 9 at 12,080. NASDAQ is down 1 at 2350. And the S&P 500 also down 1 at 1376. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Diana Walter. It's now 5 minutes past the hour.
Live from Chicago, the city with many names, it's the Cup of Joe Radio Show. 2 hours of truth and fury representing the fighting spirit of the American worker. And now, the miracle of screaming audio, here's the guy your bosses hate, the Windy City's biggest windbag, your host, Joe Vecchio.
All right. We are back here in Chicago after a beautiful, wonderful weekend here in the Windy City. And yes, it was windy, and yes, it was a little cold, but it was just a beautiful, beautiful weekend here in Chicago. The sun was out, the sky was a beautiful shade of blue, and I just got outside for as long as I possibly could to enjoy it. It was just wonderful, because, you know, it gets kind of really gray and rainy here sometimes, and I don't like gray and rainy anywhere I'm at. How you doing? My name is Joe Vecchio, and like I said, I am here in Chicago, and I am the host of the Cup of Joe radio show. And for those of you who remember, I was filling in for Dr. Bill last week. Dr. Bill will be in his regular time slot tomorrow, and I was very happy to have filled in and helped out while he was helping out Bruce Birch. We all help each other out because, you know, we're good liberals. Now, I want to ask people something. I want to ask you people something, because this occurred to me, because when you wake up, or when you're at a point where you're just woken up, or you're just about to fall asleep, and something happens that wakes you right up, and you're at a point where maybe you were kind of sort of dreaming, and you dream something really, really kind of surreal. And no matter how weird it is, it always makes perfect sense for you when you're in that frame of mind. It always makes perfect sense. Well, you know, the two cows came up to me and told me of the secret formula that I have to get up to Indianapolis. So we're taking my gasoline-powered tricycle up there. And, you know, it gets completely off the wall. And you usually forget right about it as soon as you wake up. But it just sounds totally weird and surreal. That's how I feel about what's going on in the country today. It just feels completely surreal. You know, with all the things going on in the Bush administration, and with this country in particular, and I wanted to bring that up, because we have an election coming up, and I've been talking for a long time about how I really don't think anything serious is going to change. And part of the reason, but not all of it, is gerrymandering. And another part will be election fraud. And I want to jump right into this because this gentleman's time is very limited. He is one of the best activist writers out there. He has written numerous books, Cruel and Unusual, The Bush Dyslexicon, and of course his latest book is Fooled Again, which was about the 2004 election debacle. Let's just bring him right on. Ladies and gentlemen, here is Mark Crispin Miller. Hi, Mark. How are you?
Hey, Joe. How you doing?
Fine. Nice to talk to you again. Now, we talked, God, how long ago was it? It must have been a few years ago, it seems.
Yeah, it was when we still thought we had a republic, I think.
I think so, yeah. Well, actually, I thought that really ended in 2000.
Yeah, well, you're absolutely right. It did.
And I think it was kind of a slow progression. Let me explain. Maybe you've seen it. You don't probably regularly read my site, but there was a cartoon this morning by Tom Tolles, the political cartoonist. And for those of you who are old enough to remember Charlie Brown and Lucy in the famous whenever Charlie Brown tried to kick the football, Lucy pulled it away. Tom Tolles' cartoon is Lucy holding the football, and Lucy has a T-shirt that says voters. And she says, I have you in the polls by substantial margins. And there's Charlie Brown dressed as a Democrat, or a Democrat dressed in a Charlie Brown shirt. And that's the way I kind of feel. Like, everybody's talking really optimistic. Oh, we've got a tide in this. And I've been saying, let's not jump to conclusions. And do you think the same thing is going to happen this time as happened in 2004 and 2002?
Yes, I do. I think it is. I think that the Republicans are actually in a better position to do it because they've got the system more thoroughly rigged than they did 2 years ago. Now, let's see. Back then, about 23% of the electorate was going to cast its votes on paperless touchscreen voting machines. That figure is now up to 39%. Mm. And another 40% or so are going to have their votes, their ballots counted by computerized optical scanners. Now, the optical scanners are preferable to paperless machines because they do count paper. On the other hand, they are computerized and they are manufactured by the same companies that make the paperless machines. People have to understand that these companies are very close to the Republican Party. Diebold is the biggest, ES&S, Hart InterCivic are three of them, and they're all demonstrably close to the GOP. And Sequoia is the fourth, and it has certainly served the purposes of the Republican Party in the past few elections. So you take that situation, and you also add to it the fact that in states like Ohio and Florida, you know, big states, they've passed unbelievable laws whose purpose basically is to make the system as, difficult to read as possible. Not transparent, but the opposite. Laws that actually are likely to disenfranchise people, you know, making more requirements on the voters, making recounts much more expensive, making audits much more difficult. In Florida, for example, and people never believe me when I say this, but the new law actually makes it illegal to hand count paper ballots that have been counted by machine. This is incredible, you know, you think about it.
Makes it illegal?
Yeah, it's illegal. So.
Oh, my God, that's worse than I thought.
Yeah, it is breathtaking. And so the point is, you see, I don't think the Republicans could possibly win this time. That is to say, they couldn't retain control of Congress because their own base is crumbling. And those parts of the country that have tended to support them are falling away. But it doesn't really matter. The fact is that they will cheat again. And the question then becomes, what do we do about it? And I've said all along that the most important thing is that the people out there know what's going on. And, of course, the press and the Democrats have refused to discuss the issue. They just deny it's a problem. So the word is getting out anyway, thanks to shows and sites like yours and so on. But
well, I do my best. And it's really, when I was living in Georgia, and I'm living in Chicago now, when I was living in Georgia, I did some work for the DeKalb County Democratic Party, which was actually the largest Democratic Party organization within the state of Georgia. And you try to talk to them about the election issue and the Diebold issue, and of course Georgia is one of those states where they have the Diebold machines all over.
Yeah.
And they didn't even want to address it.
Right.
And these are the people who should be pushing, and mostly they're people of color who are going to be the most disenfranchised.
That's right.
By all of this.
It's amazing. Well, I have found that at the grassroots level, people really care about this, but the establishment will not provide them with the facts they need, so that they can make a responsible decision. Anyway, I think the most important thing right now, because it's a week away. I mean, the most important thing is for people to get out and vote. That may sound like a paradox because I'm saying on the one hand the system's not reliable, but it's for that very reason people should vote. Because, see, if there's a high turnout next week, that will make it that much harder for the Republicans to spin their next upset victory as legitimate. And it will also psychologically prepare people for the fact that they're really going to have to struggle now. I mean, the fight is going to begin on Election Day. It's not going to end then. Because
right.
I think, the time has finally come after all these stolen elections. The American people have got to refuse to acknowledge the legitimacy of the ruling party, which wouldn't be there if it weren't for fraud and gerrymandering and felon disenfranchisement and you name it.
Well, I got my baseball bat right here.
Okay.
And I'm ready. Listen, Mark, I'll tell you what we're going to do. We got to take a little quick break here. We got our first break coming up. I'd like for you to hang on, and if possible, if anybody wants to call in, we'll take a couple of calls if that's okay, because I know your time is limited,
yeah,
and I want to try to get...
I can stay with you till the half hour.
Okay, that's fine. We're going to take a little break. Call in the number, 1-877-443-2366, 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. If anybody wants to call in and talk to Mark Crispin Miller about the election fraud, and we'll be back after a few.
You're listening to the Head On Radio Network.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
A routine visit to the pediatrician costs more than a minimum wage worker earns in one full day. For nearly a decade, Virginia's minimum wage has remained pitifully low at $5.15 an hour.
I'm a single mom and I have to work two jobs just to pay the rent and put food on the table. It's really hard.
America needs a raise. Help raise the minimum wage. Sign the petition at www.vafairwage.org. Sponsored by the Virginia AFL-CIO, working hard for all working people.
There's one place on the web you can go that's so topical you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WDYAD40.com. Claude, Wally, and Dookie are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in news, politics, and a great sense of humor. So stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com, a place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. Your one-stop shop for all things progressive.
Okay, and we're back here on the Cup of Joe radio show, and we're speaking here with my guest, Mark Crispin Miller, author of the book Fooled Again, which you can go on Barnes & Noble or at Amazon.com and pick up your copy. It's a wonderful, wonderful book. And Mr. Miller's time is very limited, so let's get right to the phones. We have Gene from Oregon on line one. Hi, Gene. Pull up a chair. Have a cup of Joe.
Hi, Joe. Hi, Mark.
Hi.
I've got two quick questions for you, Mr. Miller. The first being, I understand that the Maryland governor has stated to his folks that not to use the machines, which would be great, except he's a Republican. And so I'm worried about the voting issue being spun like it's more of a Democratic trick than a Republican.
Yeah, that's
like the Democrats are doing it more than Republicans.
Yeah, that's the first question. The other question that I had was, is there any way, do you know of anybody trying to boycott use of the Diebold machines or any other ATM machines in order to kind of punish the companies that make these machines at all?
Okay, I'll answer the second question first. You can't really boycott what amounts to a monopoly. It's important to understand that the spread of these kinds of machines has taken place against the spirited efforts of grassroots organizations all over the country. And these are people who played by the rules. They got expert testimony. I mean, they made, you know, completely solid cases against the use of the machines. They went to the hearings. They tried to persuade the boards of elections. And the fact is that all their work, in most cases, was for naught. because the fix was in. You know, the Diebold and ESNS are very close to the Republican Party, but they also have a lot of money for buying up Democratic politicians. So you can't really boycott them. Boycotting them would involve boycotting the election, and that wouldn't do us any good because, you know, then they'd just say, well, people didn't care enough to vote.
But what about boycotting the ATM machines for banking and such? That they
well, the their... problem with that is it's hard to tell which ATMs are manufactured by Diebold and which aren't, you know.
Okay.
I mean, I'm sympathetic to boycotts in principle, but I don't know if in this particular case that I think there's no substitute, basically, for getting the word out about how completely unreliable and overpriced these machines are. I think we should go to paper ballots and hand count them.
Mm-hmm.
And I predict.
Well, I think. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say someday I think that's what we're all going to agree on using. I mean, that's what they use in Europe and in Canada, and the system works fine. That's not insurance against fraud, but these machines represent a qualitative change in the nature of fraud because one person can basically eliminate millions of votes just taking a couple of minutes with fiddling with a memory card. It's the easiest thing in the world, and that's undetectable,
right.
You know.
And there's always going to be some sort of fraud, but if you have a system in place where you have the paper ballot as the official ballot of record, it's counted by hand.
Right.
In each precinct, without moving the boxes first, you know,
right.
With full and complete chain of custody of the ballots,
yeah.
Where in a situation where everybody can see what's happening, then you're going to drop the level of fraud down to really, really unbelievably low levels.
That's
because
right.
it's much more difficult to do that.
That's right. It would be much more difficult to do. I mean, in Mexico, where I believe it was stolen recently, they have an all-paper system, and they hand count them. So where there's a will, there's a way. But, you know, basically the people have to have control of the electoral process. That's how to fix this. Now, your other question had to do with the Democrats being charged with perpetrating fraud. And that's a very good instinct on your part, a sharp instinct, because the fact is that the party, Republican Party, does intend to swift vote the Democrats in precisely this way, especially if through some fluke they don't win, you know, they don't maintain control of the House and Senate. So let's say they lose the House by two seats.
Mm-hmm.
What they'll do, and I have this, somebody in the party is the source of this, somebody who spoke off the record. What they're going to do is start screaming bloody murder about election fraud,
mm-hmm.
and use the Maryland case and also the gubernatorial race in Washington State 2 years ago to make their case that, yeah, the Democrats are doing this, and it's going to be completely baseless. You know, there is no evidence that the Democrats engaged in election fraud. And furthermore, you hear a lot of Republicans claiming that voter fraud is a huge problem, that a lot of Democrats, you know, vote three times or dead people. This is complete fiction.
Mm-hmm.
There's a report that was submitted to the Election Assistance Commission, which is Bush's hand-picked body. It's supposed to govern the whole system. There was a report that found that there is no evidence of voter fraud of any appreciable magnitude. I mean, maybe two, three instances of people. Yeah, we're talking about minuscule numbers, but nothing systematic. And the EAC suppressed the study. If you hear people from an outfit called the American Center for Voting Rights making these pompous arguments about voter fraud, understand that that organization is a Republican Party front.
Okay.
Those are not independent voices. But anyway, people should be, you know, the Democrats unfortunately refuse to preempt this Republican strategy by simply telling the truth about what's been going on. So it's up to the rest of us to get the word out that this is these days a Republican specialty, although both parties have certainly stolen plenty of elections in the past.
All right, and I thank you for your time.
All right, thank you, Gene. That was a couple of good questions there. And then the question is really, you know, and again, and you just go back to it, what happens if we look like we're up ahead by, what, 13 points nationally? Of course, I've always said that national polls don't mean a thing in regional elections.
Right.
But what happens if, you know, the Republicans somehow manage to get 51% and get just enough? And how do people react? Even though they know for a fact, you can't find people on the streets now who admitted to voting for George Bush,
right,
and who will admit to voting for Republicans. It's getting harder and harder to locate these people.
That's right.
Outside of certain regions.
Well, there's this myth, an enormous evangelical turnout. They used it to explain away the anomalies. Well, the fact that the numbers just simply did not add up in 2004. You cannot make a rational case explaining how Bush got all those votes. You know, he supposedly got almost 12 million more votes in 2004 than he got in 2000. This is not possible because of his disapproval ratings, because of the Democratic turnout, because of divisions in the Republican Party. Nevertheless, the religious right stepped up and said, we did this. We got millions of people out there, even though there weren't enough of them to make that happen. And the press and the Democrats seemed very ready to accept that, you know. So now we're hearing the same thing. Just like last time we hear, this time they're going to have this sort of expanding population of phantom evangelicals who materialize on Election Day. And it's, you know, let's just keep our heads here. There is no such majority. They don't exist.
Maybe what we ought to do, and some people have already started to do, is just go to some of these polling places with cameras.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
And just, you know, and that's the wonderful miracle of technology that we have today, that through YouTube and through the blogs and through other sources that we can get this type of word out to people, and we can show, look, where's the turnout? We've got a camera here. We'll fast forward it.
Yes, right.
You know, how many people do you see going into this place?
That's exactly right. That's a very good point. There's a new book out called What Happened in Ohio by Bob Fitrakis and some other guys. Great book. It's full of primary documents, you know, which just prove that Ohio was stolen, as we've all been arguing forever, as Robert F. Kennedy pointed out in Rolling Stone. It's true. And, you know, they found that there was no – see, the line was that there was this huge Christian turnout late in the day in the southeastern counties of the state, and people who were there monitoring were, you know, unanimous in saying that it was very light late day turnout. These multitudes just weren't there, you know.
And we're not going to get any help from the press. I mean, look at how they're talking about the mudslinging that the Republicans are doing in their political ads.
Yeah.
They're all talking about, well, the Democrats are doing it too, but they don't show any examples of
it. Exactly right.
And all they say, you know, and you can't get the word out that way, and it's really, really depressing. Like I said at the beginning of the show, it's just surreal.
It is surreal. That's absolutely
surreal.
The word for it.
Listen, you know, Mark, can I ask you a favor?
Sure.
Because, you know, like you said, we've got the election coming up on Tuesday.
Right.
If your schedule permits, could you come on the show on Friday?
Yeah, sure.
Around the same time, and we can talk about the results one way or the other, what happens.
You mean the Friday after Election Day?
The Friday after Election Day, right.
Of course. Just have your producer email me, and I'll be glad to come on.
Okay, because we're coming up on our bottom of the hour break, and I know you got to go, and I know your time is valuable, and I really, really do appreciate it. And, of course, obviously, I wish you could stay on, you know, for an hour or so, but I know you've got other things to do. You've got other people to talk to.
The next time I'm in Chicago, you know, I'm from Chicago, and the next time I'm out there, I should stop by.
Yeah, come in the studio.
Yeah.
I've got a real nice little setup here. You can sit in a nice, comfortable couch and relax, and we can have a good, long conversation.
That'd be great. But in
and
the meantime,
I'll take you out.
We'll talk the Friday after Election Day.
Great.
Okay, thanks, Jerry.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, Mark Crispin Miller, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, I know we had another caller that couldn't get in. I'm sorry, it just happens that way. We get into talking. We'll get you after the break. But it really does seem, you know, pretty surreal. And it's going to happen. And, you know, talking about the situation in Ohio, Ken Blackwell is out there. He's the governor of Ohio, and he's running for office, but he's also still the Secretary of State, which means he's responsible for counting the votes in his own election. And what the heck is up with that? And in 2004, he was the campaign manager, the co-chair of the Bush-Cheney campaign, and he was still the Secretary of State, and he was still in charge of counting the votes. But like I said, we've got a caller. We'll get to him on right after the break here, which is coming up. For anybody else who wants to call in, and I'm sorry, more people didn't get a chance to talk to Mark Crispin Miller. The number is 1-877-443-2366, 1-877-4. Head on. It's the bottom of the hour. We'll be back in a few.
This is the Head-On Radio Network, The Horn.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Are you still looking for weapons of mass destruction? Concerned about the future of the Supreme Court? You want to know how government bureaucrats are changing Social Security, overtime pay, or the environment? Maybe you just want to know if the president's lying to you, or when our troops in Iraq can finally come home. I'm Mark Levine. I've got the inside scoop. When you want to know what's going on inside the Beltway, you need a Beltway insider. Someone who's worked in the government and still has sources willing to give you all the news from Washington the government does not want you to know. So for lively debate, reasoned opinion, detailed analysis of history and policy, or just a point of view you don't hear expressed in the mainstream media, tune in to the Inside Scoop. Feel free to call in too. Agree or disagree. All opinions are welcome. It just might make you think. That's the Inside Scoop, weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 1 Central, 11 o'clock Pacific, right here on the Head-On Radio Network.
This is the story about a group of kids who volunteered.
We fix stuff. Did some art projects with the kids.
Clean up the park.
We worked in the woods.
I just wanted to do something.
We fixed up this house.
Did something for the planet.
Hey, that was all I needed. And you know what? It was great.
It was a blast.
At first, they didn't know each other.
I didn't know anyone.
Well, that didn't last long.
This guy is really funny.
Me?
These are my new friends. These are really good new friends.
Are you into it?
Are You Into It is a volunteer program for kids like you who care. If you want to make a difference in your community and make friends, call 4-H toll-free at 1-888-77-YOUTH or check out our website at www.areyouintoit.com.
This definitely made a difference.
I feel like I can do everything now.
A public service message brought to you by 4-H, the Cooperative Extension System, and the Ad Council.
Okay, and we're back here in the Cup of Joe radio show. I want to thank my guest, Mark Crispin Miller, for coming on. I wish he had a little bit more time to talk about this, because this is such an obviously important issue. And I know a lot of people out there have specific causes that they want to get settled, and they're all important, but this is one of those cases where you got to put the horse before the cart, because until you get the election stuff fixed, you're not going to be able to fix any of the other stuff. So long as the Republicans can rig the elections, they can feel free to govern in whatever fashion they want. Let's go right to the phone. We have Ray on line 3. And Ray, I'm sorry you missed Mr. Miller, but you know, when you get into conversation, sometimes things get going. How are you?
I'm doing fine, Joe. I just wanted to pose another possibility of what might happen during this election.
Fire away.
the Democrats win, the Republicans contest, and then prove that there was voter fraud, but you can't tell who did the fraud. Because even the Republicans could win if they made the Democrats look like they won, if they could overthrow it.
Yeah, I've heard that scenario before, too. I think Vilmon on the Whiskey Bar, Vilmon.org, has pointed that out.
I go when Mark was on, I said, gee, you know, I don't trust the system either way.
Well, it's certainly a possibility, and one of the scenarios is that what will happen is that they'll raise such a stink about it that it will go into arbitration, and who arbitrates it but the House.
And the Supreme Court.
And they'll put everything in favor of the Republicans. Now, if they go that far, if we're talking about, you know, 10 or 15 seats that they all vote and put the Republican in, I think there will be a huge outcry, and I think maybe people will start taking to the streets.
Mm-hmm.
So they'd be taking a big chance if they did it that way. But we have to have such a huge turnout in order to overcome the fraud that's going to really be happening.
Right. Okay, anyway, I voted Friday on the Sequoia.
Good for you.
It was an AVC advantage by Sequoia, so I don't know if my vote counted anyway.
Where is what state are you in?
Louisiana.
You're in Louisiana, okay.
Yep.
Are you in one of the storm areas? Did you get really affected by the storm?
My mom and sister live down in the storm area. I was with Sarge a couple weeks ago. We went down to Gulfport in Jackson County. In fact, we called you up last week.
That's right, you did. You absolutely did. And I know that they're doing everything they can to keep the chocolate folks, so to speak, disenfranchised as much
as
possible.
Well, that's just the chocolate folks. It's the white folks, too.
Yeah, but you know, anytime you get a big city like that that votes primarily Democratic, and anytime you get a demographic that votes primarily Democratic, they're going to do everything they can.
Oh, yeah.
To prevent you from voting. And, you know, but it's really, you know, you can say, well, that's on, you know, that's typical tricks and stuff, but it really does go against, you know, the whole Democratic notion. I mean, I know the Democrats have tried stuff like that before, but never on the scale like this, at least not since, you know, before the Civil War. You know what I mean? When the Democrats were the really hardcore pro-slavery party.
Well, yeah, they were strong in the South, too.
Well, yeah, because for years, because the Republicans were the ones that you know, ran the Civil War, until the Civil Rights Movement in the 60s, you couldn't find a Southerner who would vote for a Republican. And it was just, you know, because they were the ones, they were the invaders.
Yeah.
You know, so, but that all changed because the Democratic Party, bless their souls, in the 60s, decided that the rights of a black person to vote was more important than maintaining their political base. Lyndon Johnson knew it when he signed the Civil Rights Act. He said, I just signed over the South to the Republican Party for the next however many years.
Yeah.
And he understood that, and it's so racist, and even people who don't want to admit it can look at it and say, yeah, it kind of makes sense, you know? So.
Well, let me let you go.
Okay. Well, listen, thanks a lot for calling in.
Okay.
And I'm sorry again you didn't get a chance to talk to him, I would have tried to get you on, but you really wouldn't have had a whole lot of time to get your question out. So.
Yeah, I understand.
Okay, Ray, you and Sarge are doing a hell of a job down there. I really appreciate it because you're showing the real effects of what the Bush administration is doing.
Right.
And it's just a sad time in this country, and we'll see, maybe, hopefully, by some miracle, things will change. But until I see evidence of that, I'm just going to keep being as skeptical as hell.
I understand. Keep up the good
work. Take care.
Okay, bye.
All right. Yeah, you know, it's... It's just like that. You live in a country and you're put in a position where you're forced to do something that you don't want to do. I was talking with the lovely Agnes Kincaid, and by the way, thank you for doing such a wonderful job producing the show, Agnes. And we were talking before the show, and you know, and I was saying basically, look, this is what the Republicans do. They want to steal power, and they operate 24/7. It's like Diebold's slogan is, "We never sleep." And they never really sleep. They constantly. And it's like I tell people who work, I say, right now, even as I'm talking, there is some pointy-headed college graduate Republican who is working with somebody's boss, some kid who grew up listening to Rush Limbaugh. He's maybe 19, 20 years old, or 22, 23, just graduated from college, looking to make a name for him or herself, and is working with some company somewhere to figure out a way to steal a working person's pensions. And you've got a Republican Party that is working 24/7, well-paid people who never have to worry about things like, can I afford to pay the rent this month? Or will I have enough money to eat? They'll never have to worry about that. And they're working 24/7. Now me, I do the best I can. And Agnes and Bob and Ben Birch and Bruce Birch and Dr. Bill O'Brien and Guy James and everybody here at the Head On Radio Network. We all are busting our buns because we are compelled to do this. We don't want to do this. In a better world, I might be still doing a radio show, but I might be doing some sort of internet music show. Or just maybe I'd have a talk show, but I'd talk about the regular everyday stuff that goes on. I've heard other radio shows like that. And it's really kind of nice. People just talking about, you know, things that go on day in and day out. But here I am forced into a position where I've got to take action that I'm probably not particularly good at. You know, I'm not good at political agitation. I'm good at talking. And I'm good at taking a complex situation and explaining it in simple manner, or at least I think I am. I try to be. But I'd really rather not do this. I would rather not be in this situation, but what choice do I have? I could just give up. And people tell me I'm giving up whenever I'm pointing out. And that's what really pisses me off. That I tell people what's going to happen, and they just accuse me of giving up. It's the Democrats, it's the left-wing version of clap louder. Because that's what the Bush administration keeps telling you about Iraq. Clap louder. If you believe, clap louder, and it'll all work out. And that nice lady who called up on Friday, I think her name was Diane, and she was like, oh, don't waste your vote, don't do something like that, you know, and I'm like, your vote's already being wasted. I mean, I appreciate your enthusiasm and your just wonderful, if naive, belief in the system. But the problem is the system's not working. And I'm trying to warn people, here's a gun. Bring it to this gunfight. Well, we don't want to be like them. You're not going to be like anything if you don't win. If you look back at history, Democratic republics have a shelf life of only a few hundred years, especially when you're talking about countries that aspire to greatness, like ancient Athens and ancient Rome. They aspired to greatness. And when those countries become great, if they become great, because not all of them get to become great, and there actually haven't been that many democratic republics that have been countries. But as soon as a country starts getting more wealthy and more powerful, they draw these people like a magnet. And they want to control other people's lives. That's how they justify their own existence. By how much they can control other people's lives. And what kind of mark they want to make on the world. And now that America is so powerful, I mean, we've always had those people anyway. It's just a question of what can we do to keep them from getting power. FDR and the New Deal did a great job in setting up a system where it made it difficult. But they've returned, man. They're back. They never go away. They never stop. They never sleep. And new generations just keep putting it out. Because there's always people who want to feel like they're more important, that they're better. And some people honestly believe that they're just simply better, more human than everybody else. Okay, we've got 15 minutes break here coming up. It's quarter to noon, almost through the first hour. Again, going very quickly. The number to call in is 1-877-443-2366 if you want to call in. 1-877-4-head-on. I'll say it right. We'll be back in a few.
This is the Head On Radio Network.
We look to the day when you can live in freedom, and America and Iran can be good friends and close partners in the cause of peace.
See, this is where we get a really bad reputation. I live in a country where I'm not even sure if my vote's going to count in November. How free are you? How free are the people on the Gulf Coast? How free are the families that still grieve for the bodies dragged out of Aracoma and Sago? How free are they? He throws around precious terms with precious little regard for them. How free are we that chose by a wide margin in the year 2000, November 2000, we chose a man named Al Gore to be the president of the United States? How free are we that we were saddled with this ignorant, ignorant, hateful little man? How free are we? How free?
I'm Bob Kincaid. Join me weeknights, 7 to 10 Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
A gallon of gas and a gallon of milk. That's what 1 hour of minimum wage work will buy. For nearly a decade, Virginia's minimum wage has remained pitifully low at $5.15 an hour.
When the plant closed, I took this job paying just a little more than the minimum wage. But I still can't support my family. Somebody should raise the bar.
America needs a raise. Help raise the minimum wage. Sign the petition at www.vafairwage.org. Sponsored by the Virginia AFL-CIO, working hard for all working people.
Here is the truth the oil companies won't tell you. Half the foreign oil they import to California is from the Middle East. As a result, California is dangerously dependent on foreign oil. Prop 87 means more alternative fuels and wind and solar power. And that means less oil dependence. Prop 87 is the one thing Californians can do now to clean up the air, help stop the climate crisis, and free us from foreign oil. The sooner we do it, the safer we'll be.
At this moment, more than 800 million people are hungry. Millions more live in poverty. And you wonder, what can I do? Join the thousands of caring people who let Heifer International be their helping hands in the world. Right now, from Appalachia to Zimbabwe, Heifer is helping thousands of families become more self-reliant through the gifts of livestock and learning. Heifer provides farm animals that produce milk, eggs, and other products. That means milk to drink and products like cheese to sell. Having income means families can have better housing and health care, and their children can go to school. And recipients share their success, passing on the gift of their animal offspring to other families in need, ensuring dignity, self-reliance, and hope for the future. Find out how you can make a difference today at heifer.org. That's HEIFER.org.
All right, and we're back here on the Cup of Joe radio show, about 10 minutes or so till the news at the top of the hour. How is everybody doing today? The number to call in, once again, is 1-877-443-2366, 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. Twice I did it. I'll get it right. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. Although I prefer to give the regular number because I always say, what the head? It's the H is that, and E is 1-877-443-2366. Just make it easier. You know, I'm old enough to remember, at least back in New York, the days when we used to have letters at the front of the phone number. For example, when I was growing up in Brooklyn, I don't even remember what our area code was, but our phone number was EM6. Was the first three, and EM stand for Empire. And if you look at old shows, sometimes people say the phone number in the Bronx is EM6, or Empire 6, they'll say. Empire 6-5555, something like that. But they don't do that anymore, and now everybody's got all sorts of phone numbers, and long distance is more and more commonplace. I'm also old enough to remember when, even on local phone calls, you had to pay by the minute. Or by however long you were on the phone. regardless. I mean, obviously it was a lot less for local, but you didn't pay a set amount and have unlimited calls. No. Technology. I want to get back on the subject of the election fraud thing. That's kind of sort of my main topic today, but not the entire thing. And it's all about also how it's being covered. And one of the sites I read regularly is The Sideshow by Avedon Carroll out in England. She's an American who lives in England and has for a long time. And it's just true. This is the way that the press has been framing it. And she talks about an article in the Washington Post this morning, front page article, about what the results of this election will mean, not to the country, not to the situation in the world, not to the soldiers in Iraq, but to Karl Rove's reputation. Because God only knows, the most important freaking thing in the world is Karl Rove's political reputation. This is front page news. Just like a while ago on Fox News, and granted you expect it from Fox because it is nothing but Republican propaganda. Pravda. Geo-Pravda. Where they had a poll that says, you know, asking that the Democrats just want Bush to fail. First of all, let me answer that. Yes. Mr. Bush is a failure. Mr. Bush could never have gotten anywhere in his life if he didn't have all that money and all these connections behind him. So regardless of how much money and how much power he has, he is a failure. Second of all, it's not about Bush. Our founding fathers didn't put this country together for the sake of George W. friggin' Bush. The soldiers who fought in the Revolutionary War, in the War of 1812, in the Civil War, in World War I, in World War II, in all the conflicts that the United States has been involved with, moral or not, they did not fight and die for George W. Bush. And for the Uber Patriots out there, they did not die for the flag. The flag is a symbol. What they fought and died for was the idea that they have a right to choose what's best for their life. And that right comes from their vote. It comes from their political activity. Because if you want a little more from the process, you have to put a little more into it. It's not just a question of, well, I vote every 2 years. It's not enough if you're serious about stuff. And, you know, people back in my father's era, in the 40s, 50s, 60s, they were much more politically active than they are now. And if you want more out of it, you got to put more into it. But this is how it's being played in the press, our so-called professional media. These are guys who make a lot of money. And I brought this up before. You know, it used to be, again, back in the day, where most people got their news from newspapers. Before television became really, really big. And television didn't get to be really big until like the late 50s, early 60s, when a lot more people started getting it. But during the 30s and the 40s and stuff, in the early 50s, when television was first starting out, not everybody had a TV set. And the idea of having two was utterly ridiculous. Most people got their news from newspapers. And the newspaper reporters, the beat reporters that wrote these stories, and the editors that edited them, and some of the publishers, but not all, so there were still some very big publishers, made, generally speaking, the same kinds of money as the people who were reading the paper. Granted, there were always star reporters who made more money. The publishers obviously made more. But that was the equivalent of, you know, a manager or a supervisor at another position. They all made roughly the same kind of money as the people who bought the newspapers. So they had the same economic experience. that everybody else was having. But nowadays, most people get their news from television. And they get their news from people who are making lots more money. A TV anchorman today, even in a small local station, is making $90,000, $100,000 a year probably. And, you know, they need that job because they know how fragile a house that they live in that sense, how thin the ice is for them. So they're very ripe for intimidation, those of them who aren't in agreement with the policies to begin with. They have a vested interest in maintaining the status quo. And that's one of the reasons why you see the reporting the way they live in their own little world. They'll talk about the minimum wage, and they'll talk about the problems facing, but they don't really understand them. They don't really care to understand them because they have no direct experience with it. And some of them grew up in families where, God bless them, they had parents who really understood higher education and pushed their kids to do that. And there's nothing wrong with that. But there's a lot of people out there who never had that benefit and who are always, God bless them, going to be service workers or janitors or people whose job it is to sweep the streets afterwards. And that's the generic term I use, the people who really make the show run. But these people are getting far less and less of a share of the American pie. What was I saying that these guys are helping to make the American pie bigger, or make the gross national product bigger, make more wealth for the country. And yet, even as they're working harder, the slice of that pie that they're getting, the piece of that American dream, is getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And the sad thing is that because of the misguided work ethic that we have, too many people are more than willing to just put up with the nonsense and, in fact, get rather snotty about it while they're getting ripped off. And that's a big reason why very little changes. Now we've got this election coming up, and we know, you know, those of us who have three brain cells and who have been paying attention, because it really does take both, understand that there's going to be massive, massive election fraud. And I know a lot of people out there want to be optimistic. And if this were a free and fair election, I would be so looking forward to this, because it would be, for us, like 1994 was for the Republicans. What I'm hoping for is a situation like 1932 was, again, for the Democrats. And it's really going to take that sort of movement in order to make some changes again. And I just don't have that kind of confidence in a Democratic leadership, even if they manage to win the election. And I don't have the kind of confidence that the election is going to turn out the way we want. And a lot of it is because of election fraud. There's other parts of it too, the gerrymandering. I've talked about that. And unfortunately, a lot of people still don't want to accept it. I mean, whether we're talking about the Democratic leadership or some of the people I see out in the blogosphere. All the O'Biggin posts. Oh boy, Bush is going to get it now. Prove it to me. Prove me wrong. Prove me wrong. Because if I'm right about this, if you think I'm obnoxious about it now, wait till you see me if the Republicans keep their hold on Congress come Election Day. Hey, we got the news coming up, top of the hour. Give me a call if you want to talk about this issue, if you want to chew my head off for being a quitter and for being negative. Give me a call, 1-877-443-2366, 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. We've got the Quality News Network coming up. We'll be back in a few here in the Cup of Joe Radio Show on the Head On Radio Network.
This is the Quality News Network. Yesterday's death of a U.S. Marine in Iraq's Anbar province set a milestone. 100 U.S. troops have died in October. That makes this month the deadliest for American service members since January of last year. In Iraq, White House National Security Advisor Stephen Hadley is meeting with U.S. military commanders and Iraqi government leaders today. On the table are discussions about Iraq's economy, security, and political problems. In Baghdad, a bomb in Sadr City killed at least 31 people today, injuring dozens more. The district has been cordoned off by U.S. and Iraqi military as the search continues for an American soldier of Iraqi descent who is believed to have been kidnapped there last week. In Washington, a Senate review shows one out of every 25 weapons bought for the Iraqi military is missing, a total of 14,000 weapons through the month of August. Thousands of others have not been properly registered and are now untraceable. That Senate report also finds the U.S. military does not have enough personnel to train Iraqi Army logistical units. In South Korea, the general commanding U.S. forces said today he expected another nuclear test from North Korea. General B.B. Bell says, however, he is confident the U.S. and South Korean military are significantly superior to those of North Korea. In Pakistan, 80 suspected al-Qaeda militants were killed today near the Afghan border. Pakistani commanders say they attacked a school being used as a terrorist training center. Local leaders, however, say those killed were civilians. In Washington, D.C., student and faculty protesters at Gallaudet University are at an end following the announcement. Over the weekend, the governing board has withdrawn the appointment of incoming President Jane Fernandez. The news set off celebrations yesterday throughout the campus of the nation's premier college for the hearing impaired. In California, the wildfire burning near Palm Springs is now 85% contained. The arson fire has consumed 63 square miles and killed four firefighters. In the Northeast, thousands remain without power this morning following severe windstorms this weekend. At least two people were killed as a result of those high winds. Violent crime in St. Louis increased 20% this year, making it the most dangerous city in the nation. That's according to a private research company which provides government such statistics annually. The safest cities, Brick, New Jersey, then Amherst, New York, and Mission Viejo, California. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Tune in to the Quality News Network on election night to learn the results of perhaps the most important midterm elections in our nation's history. QNN will go beyond the scorecard reporting of the numbers. We will delve into the reasons why America voted the way we did and what it may mean for our future. Over the past 6 months, QNN has conducted over 250 interviews with candidates in the 2006 elections. All of the candidates are challengers for House, Senate, and gubernatorial seats from all parties from all 50 states. You can hear these interviews at qualitynewsnetwork.com. These are the people who have carried the banner of democracy during this vital election campaign, and they will be joining us on the air to talk about their races, why they won or lost, and what they learned about the process and the voters. So tune into the Quality News Network on election night and learn where we are going from those who are going to lead us. Now back to the news.
Chinese researchers say a component in curry may reduce the risk of brain inflammation and Alzheimer's in the elderly. Best results were seen in people who ate curry on a regular basis. The London Zoo says it successfully bred a sirocco dove, a small Mexican bird believed to have died out in the wild 30 years ago. Zoo officials say they've named the bird Arnie after actor and California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger. Greece hosts the first ever UN Global Summit on the Internet today. More than 1,000 delegates are expected to attend the four-day conference. The first shipment of American beef to South Korea in 3 years has arrived and will be quarantined for the next 2 weeks before hitting the market. U.S. beef had been banned there since 2003 due to concerns about mad cow disease. A new survey by Wells Fargo Bank shows rising interest rates concern nearly 80% of American homeowners with adjustable rates, but more than 50% say they believe they would be able to refinance those loans if necessary. Light sweet crude is $58.74 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange, and on Wall Street at this hour, the Dow Jones is down 5 points, the NASDAQ is up 7 points, the S&P 500 is flat. Gold is trading at $609.10 an ounce. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Annabelle Lund, and it's 5 minutes past the hour.
Welcome back to the Cup of Joe Radio Show, the show that asks the all-important question, hey, you gonna eat that? And now, back again for another hour of truth and fury, here's the man your bosses hate, the voice of the working man's thinking man, Joe Vecchio.
Okay, thank you, Bob. How are you doing? And we're on a beautiful day here in Chicago. I can see out the window what a nice sunny day it is. And it's just such a shame that you have to look at that and get all depressed about what's going on in the country and what's going on in the world, right? I mean, never mind what's going on over here. But there's still soldiers dying in Iraq, and there's still poor Iraqis dying in Iraq. And it just boggles the mind. And we've been talking mostly election fraud today. But you know what? You're welcome to talk about whatever topic you want. And you know, speaking of talking, let's just get right to the phones. And we've got Dave on line one for us. Hi, Dave. How you doing?
So good, Joe. You're hitting hard on the main subject right now because you know, as we look back, and all evidence now tells us that Al Gore won in 2000, that John Kerry won in 2004. And yet still we've got these criminals occupying our White House. We've got congressmen that should never have been elected to anything, criminals themselves, in our Congress. And there's no thought, well, we can kick them out. They didn't get elected. So I want to know what is going to be different come next week, because there's no doubt in my mind they fully plan to steal as many seats as they think they can possibly get away with.
And criticize any seats that they lose, too, to the point where it gets to the point where it has to be decided by Congress. I really don't know what the reaction of the country is going to be. I wish I could say that we were all going to run out of our homes with whatever weapons we have and just, you know, go out in the street and start yelling and screaming like they did in, not Mexico, but there was another election. It was in Europe somewhere, where they made such a commotion that they actually had to recount and redo the election.
Have they accomplished that yet? Because I've understood that it might be a divided government they're going to end up with.
In Mexico?
Yes.
Yeah, I think that they haven't. The Supreme Court in Mexico, I think, said that you couldn't recount the votes, which is kind of stupid. But then again, I know very little about Mexican law, so I don't know. I couldn't answer that question.
Well, the people
aren't
accepting it. The people are out in the streets by the millions, and they're saying, we're not going to live with this. And I guess the candidate that didn't make it, Lopez, he's planning to put in place an alternative government if they won't, the cons that have stolen that won't step aside any more than the ones we have here. It's a strange breed of people that have taken over everywhere right now.
Well, it's the big multinational corporations are behind it. I mean, you know, we look at, you know, Coke and McDonald's and stuff like that, and they're still, you know, they're global entities, and I'm not sure if those are the ones on it. I remember years ago, in fact, I've got the YouTube video that I plan on posting on my website, which is, by the way, cupofjoe.blogspot.com. But it was years ago on Saturday Night Live, Robert Smigel, who's known for doing that obnoxious little dog interviewing character, but he also did those wonderful little animated vignettes, Fun with Real Audio and other stuff. And he had one called Conspiracy Theory Rock, which was a parody of the old Schoolhouse Rocks. And it was all about how GE and all these different companies owned the news, and therefore they controlled what output, what content got out. You wouldn't hear anything bad about the nuclear industry. You wouldn't hear anything bad about GE or about any of the stuff. It's really part of it. They control the means of production there, as far as that's concerned. Is that you, Dave? Are you breaking up there? Is Dave breaking up, Zach? Okay. Dave, if you want to call back, because I still wanted to talk to you about this. But yeah, I think that's really part of the problem, that we don't have the methods of communication. Means of production is wrong. That's a Karl Marx term. But we don't have the methods of communication. That's where the Internet is so important, or the Internets are so important, because it enables me, and who am I, but just a guy with a microphone and a computer and a means to transmit what I have to say out to whoever wants to listen out there, however many millions of you are out there listening to me. before this, before the internet, if I wanted to do that, I had to try to get a job at a radio station, and maybe after a few years of working as an intern, I might be able to get a small chance on a small station somewhere. But now, anybody can do this. Anybody. As long as you're good. I like to think I'm good. I like to think I'm good enough to that Bob and Agnes and Ben Birch and all the wonderful people at the Head On Radio Network think I'm doing a good job. Oh, by the way, before I forget, tell everybody to go to the Head On Radio chat room where you can chat with some of the more intelligent people, some of the most intelligent people on the blogosphere. Just go to headonradionetwork.com and click in the chat room. We apparently lost Dave. I guess I heard some static out there, so I guess we just lost the connection. Dave, if you want to call back and we can get you back on. But we do have Cody from San Francisco on line one. Hi, Cody. How you doing?
I'm doing good, Joe. It's Cody from PowersandMorrison.com, and I wasn't going to call in until I heard you talking about the media just controlling and saying, choosing what they want to report and what they don't want to report, and this whole citizens' media, this great gift that we have to be able to listen to the horn and be able to get our news from unbiased sources that aren't circumspect to editorial. And it sort of brought me back to a San Francisco Chronicle article about my colleague Josh Wolf, where they sort of trying to blast him in there. And I think it's because these mainstream networks that you're just talking about, all that power, they're about to lose it because they're facing a coup because progressives are more and more likely. I mean, it's mostly progressives that are reading the San Francisco Chronicle, and more of them are going to independent news websites like PowersandMorrison.com and. Instead of listening maybe to the Quake radio, they're listening to the Head On radio. And the mainstream establishment is losing their clout.
And it's even worse for the newspapers than it is for the TV stuff. That's right. Because, you know, people get fed up with it. And what the propagandists don't understand is that after a while, no matter how good you are, people just tune it out. I mean, how many people believed Pravda in Izvestia? In the 70s and 80s, how many Russian people really believed what they were reading in that? So no matter how much control you have, there's still a limit.
No, absolutely.
To what you can
do. And they printed this slanderous ad about Joshua. If I call it an ad, they call it an article, but it's just a propaganda ad for the state. And it's just sick. And it's because they're jealous and they fear him. And he sets the record straight at joshwolf.net. People don't know Josh Wolf is a blogger in jail for blogging, and they just don't accurately cover the truth. It's such a biased article. It should be an editorial. It shouldn't have been in the actual article side, because on the article sections of the newspaper, you're supposed to show both sides. If it's an editorial, then you can express your bias.
Well, you shouldn't even show. You know, you shouldn't even have this both sides things if one side is just a complete and utter lie. Well, you know, we have this person says 1 and 1 equals 2, but a couple other people say 1 and 1 is 3. Well, but you know, so we're not really sure about it. It's a big controversy, so we'll just continue on to the next story.
Yeah, and it's just sick because the irony is that after the federal authorities jailed Josh Wolf, they actually are trying to jail two San Francisco Chronicle reporters over the Barry Bonds steroids case, because these reporters won't give up their sources. So the federal investigation into steroid use, which seems a little bit of a waste of taxpayer money when the local authorities should be handling that. It shouldn't be the federal authorities. The federal authorities supposedly are to be keeping us safe from another terrorist attack. Instead, they're harassing the, you know, baseball players for steroids, the daily journalists for articles they write about athletes using steroids. This makes me feel that Republicans do not make us safer because the executive branch controls all these grand jury investigations. In fact, last week I met with a member of San Francisco City Supervisors talking about grand jury reform, because I put up my Grand Jury Restoration Act at PowersandMorrison.com, trying to say, listen, if we can't shape, if we get control,
hey,
we
Dave,
need to.
Dave, hold on. Let me interrupt you for a second, because we're a quarter after the hour and we have to go to break. Can you hang on? I want you to stay on, because I want you to continue to talk about this.
All right,
we got to pay the bills here, okay?
I understand.
So just hang on, and you can
continue
with your thought when we come back. We'll be back in a few. The Cup of Joe Radio Show.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business, anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
Recently on the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network.
If you have tuned into this program by mistake right now, and you are a Republican, a right-wing Republican specifically, before this program is over, I do want to warn you, you're going to think that I'm the devil. You're going to think I've got horns and a red cape because I hate the Bush administration and everything they stand for. So be ye warned right away, okay? You're all warned right now that that's where we're coming from today.
Don't miss Guy James, weekdays, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, on the Head On Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patty Peterson, and that's the familiar call for Donna Reed. And we'd like to invite you to this year's Donna Reed Festival. If you'd like to study acting from real professionals, then you want to join hundreds of other students from all over the country for workshops in the performing arts. I look forward to seeing you for a great week in Donna's hometown of Denison, Iowa. For more information, please dial 1-800-336-IOWA or visit our website, donnareed.org.
In the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina, you can help people in need. Here are a few suggestions. Contact your local Red Cross. Donate blood. Call 1-800-HELP-NOW. You can also donate money. Go to redcross.org. And as well, you can contact your local church, synagogue, or mosque and find out what they're doing to help people affected by Hurricane Katrina. Thank you for your help and get involved.
This is The Horn, the Head On Radio Network.
Okay, we're back here in the Cup of Joe Radio Show, and we're talking with Dave from PowersandMorrison.com. Dave, I'm sorry to cut you off like that. I hate to do that, but sometimes it happens.
Yeah, actually, it's Cody. I think you said Dave.
I'm sorry. Dave was the last caller.
Yes.
I just woke up a little while ago, you know, so my head is still... still out there. We're talking with Cody from PowersandMorrison.com, and that is Powers and Morrison, or Powers ampersand
and
Morrison.
A&B, just spelled out.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's just come to my attention. I mean, even on some progressive talk show hosts have been sort of advertising a pernicious doctrine of as who's considered protected journalists under the First Amendment, And the suggestion of narrowly defining who qualifies as a protected journalist would result in an elite class of professionals who work for mainstream media outlets, while reporters for the alternative press would be given no choice but to practice their craft without a net. And I would anticipate that approach would establish a state-sanctioned journalist license, and anyone would be subject to having their license revoked should they stray from the party line. And, I mean, the First Amendment was not written to protect the Hearst Corporation and its thousands of employees, although it should. But when the Founding Fathers sent out to guarantee a free press, they really did seek to protect independent journalists and pamphleteers, which in the 18th century, everybody was doing pamphlets and getting politically active. I mean, there was printing presses all over the place, such as Thomas Paine and his Common Sense. So, I mean, this is a core American value, is this.
And, it goes to show, because Thomas Paine, like a lot of us here, he lived most of his life in poverty. In fact, he died broke. So he really believed in what he was doing, and I'm not putting myself on the level of Thomas Paine, but the truth of the matter is that a lot of the people who really do this kind of fighting do it not because they're looking to make a few bucks, but because, you know, they believe something very strongly. And this is really going to affect people.
Yeah, where do you draw the line? I mean, are you really a real radio show host, or do you have to make $150,000 a year or a few million a year like Rush Limbaugh to be considered a radio host? I mean, the quality isn't taken into consideration, the quality of the news reporting, which is sometimes a joke in the mainstream press. I mean, what about the stories that are ignored or neglected by the mainstream media? Are those issues really not worthy of coverage simply because the establishment media has deemed them unfit for airtime? I mean, it's important that these stories are covered, and that's why I listen to The Horn, because The Horn is and people like Greg Palast and things like the BBC World Service, those are giving you a whole complete different perspective is what you would get in the mainstream on the CNN or the CNBC, the spin.
Right.
There's no spin on The Horn. The Horn is unbossed.
And we'll have people like I just had Mark Crispin Miller on. At the first part of the show, for those of you who missed that, I wish he could have stayed longer. But if you know anything about him, he's been writing about the election fraud issue and other issues along those lines for many, many years. And you rarely get to see him on any kind of mainstream channel. In fact, when they have these sort of left-right debates, there's always a far-right freak and a kind of sort of moderate centrist, slightly right-leaning, you know, Democrat. You don't see, you know, Upton Sinclair couldn't get any airtime today if he was alive, you know. Nobody who's really strongly left like that. And, of course, they make fun of any kind, anybody who's relatively intelligent, like Al Gore. Al Gore is one of the smartest people to ever serve this country as vice president or as senator or as congressman. He credentials when he was running for president, and it's just astounding. He was a congressman, he was a senator, he was vice president, and really a very important player in the Clinton administration, one of the smartest guys on the planet as far as politics is concerned and how to use politics to make life better. And what do? We mock him for being intelligent. And we put this guy, George W. Bush, up, and we revere him because he's an idiot. People like that.
Yeah, they don't want to feel intimidated by their leader. I mean, it reminds me of James Madison and Thomas Jefferson debating on who should be able to vote. Because because Madison believed that only the educated should be able to vote, because not because of like totalitarianism, but rather because he was afraid that the uneducated masses would elect a Bush, and then that kind of person, they would elect an idiot who would just wreck the country. And
you know what's
Jefferson,
funny about that is, go ahead.
I was just going to say that.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Rebuttal to that was, well, you need the Fourth Estate. You need the media to force feed the truth down the throats of every voter, and that way they'll have the power to pick the right person, and they won't be ignorant.
And as long as the media is controlled by people who have their own agendas, who control the purse strings of the reporters, and who are less interested in the truth than they are in, you know, lining their pockets or serving a political cause, then we're going to have serious problems. Didn't Jefferson say that if he had a choice between a government without a free press and a free press without a government, he'd take the free press without the government?
I don't know, but that sounds really intelligent. And, gosh, if it's just there's it comes back to the consolidation of media. And when you Dan Rather, who bit his tongue for a long time, can come out and do, he has his own program now, but it's on satellite TV. But he's just saying, you know, when you go from 400 networks to four networks, there's no independence, there's no room for dissent, because you've got contractors like GE that, you know, Bob Kincaid always reminds us of. It's like, look at the conflict of interest. If you've got a government contractor reporting the news, it's against their best interest to want to shut down this war, because they're making a lot more money on the war than they are from their news.
Right. It's like when I talked about doing business loans. I mean, when people want to invest in a business, they want an instant return, and they want a big return. So, you know, it's harder for someone trying to start a small business in this country who just wants a business where they can earn a living. And it's easier for someone who wants to start a business making millions of dollars and becoming a millionaire. It's the same psychology at play. Because these guys, like you said, they're making a fortune on this war. Even if you're not Halliburton, you're making a fortune on this war. If you're a big company and you deal with the news of the situation, and they don't want that gravy train to end. It's a difference between people who are looking to work so that they have control over their lives and people who are looking to work so they can have control over other people's lives. And the Bush people and the corporatists behind them and the big moguls in the media, they get off on the idea of controlling other people. And the only thing that prevents them is us. And part of that way is through the vote. And the other part of that way is just through our unified action, if we get together. Unfortunately, we tend to fight amongst ourselves more than we fight our common enemy, who are the corporatists behind the Bush administration. I mean, you know, the entire Bush administration, Bush, Cheney, all the senators and congressmen, they're really just fronts for the financial people behind them. They all work in cahoots, but the ones that pull the purse strings are the ones that really control what's going on.
Absolutely, and I mean, I just had to look at a couple quotes of Edward Murrow, and he said about television, this instrument can teach, it can illuminate, yes, and it can even inspire, but it can only do so to the extent that humans are determined to use it to those ends. Otherwise, it merely is wires and lights in a box. But I mean, I would take it even further, because it can become brainwashing. It can, you know, if you're not using it to the proper ends, it can be used to do what Fox News has done, which is to terrorize the nation. And Murrow said, no one can terrorize the nation unless we are all his accomplices.
We take that and we go from Dan Rather on CBS, who, you know, some people didn't like him because of his ego, but he was a real journalist, and we go from that to Katie Couric, who was just, you know, God. And I remember an old Berkeley Breathe cartoon, Bloom County, where they had, you know, some bimbo on, and now here's, you know, so-and-so, our new bimbo with the news, who talking about the big accident coming up. Hi! Oh, gross! You know, and that's what I think whenever I hear about Katie Couric doing the news. You know, oh, gross.
and people got sick of that, and that's why Keith Olbermann has been able to not get canceled, because he pushes really hard sometimes, and I can tell that his producers make him throw some fluff in there to water it down a bit, because there's so much ammunition that progressives can use against the Republicans, and the reason why we don't have so much more of a better in the polls. I mean, we're doing good, but we'd be doing a heck of a lot better if everybody behaved the way that Keith Olbermann does when he's doing a special comic, because there's so much that news that is just becomes a fog fact and that doesn't get through to the masses that watch so much television, and even the masses watch so much news, and they get the watered down news.
I hear you, and you know, it just—I don't know what to do about it except to keep listening to the horn and all that. Cody,
all right,
Powers
you.
And Morrison. I'm sorry, I got to cut you off because we're coming to the bottom of the hour here.
Plug the site powersandmorrison.com. Call
Powers and AND, right?
Andy, and also joshwolf.net, and that's the blogger in jail's website. And thanks so much.
Thank you much, Cody. All right, that was Cody from Powers and Morrison. .com. We're coming up on the bottom of the hour here. Let's take a little break, and we'll be back in a few. Cup of Joe Radio Show here on the Head On Radio Network.
There's one place on the web you can go that's so topical, you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WBYAD40.com. Clyde, Wally, and Doofy are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in news, politics, and a great sense of humor. So stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com, a place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com, your one-stop shop for all things progressive.
Head On Radio with Bob Kincaid.
When somebody tell me when the United States of America went from a can-do country to a can't-do country. Was can-do washed away in the fetid floods of Katrina? Was can-do killed in the stinking sands of Iraq? Did can-do get buried in the dank and gassy hole of Sago number 1? Where did the Bush administration go when they took can-do out and killed it? What happened to a nation that never said we can't? What happened to that nation that knew that the only thing it had to fear was fear itself?
Well, Mr. Kincaid, we've replaced that slogan. Now all we have is fear.
Head On with Bob Kincaid, 7 to 10 p.m. weeknights on the Head On Radio Network. Do you know what
you want? We are taking to the streets, sidewalks, paths, and parks across Canada in support of ALS research and to raise money to provide quality care for the thousands of Canadians living with ALS and their families. Please join us. Walk for ALS is a fun, family-friendly event occurring in more than 60 communities across Canada. We are walking because ALS is a devastating disease. The average life expectancy is only 2 to 5 years.
We are walking because every day 2 to 3 Canadians die from ALS.
We are walking to provide hope.
We are walking for those who can't. Most people with ALS will lose the use of their legs in the first 2 years of the disease. What would you do while you still could? For more information or to register for the Walk for ALS, visit www.als.ca/walkforALS.
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
And this is Joe Vecchio here with the last half hour of the Cup of Joe radio show. Man, time flies. It just seems like I just started the show. And I was mentioning the other day, my roommate says, how can you do 2 hours? Seems like forever. And it's like, it just goes by. You don't even think about it. It helps to take the commercial breaks. It helps to take the commercial breaks. And it also helps to have good callers. And again, I want to thank Mark Crispin Miller, author of Fooled Again. Go to Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble or wherever you get your books from and pick up a copy if you possibly can. It is a great book. And I want to thank him for coming on. I wish he had more time to talk and field questions because there's so much going on with the election fraud issue. And I'm talking about that chiefly today, but also about how the press is covering that, which is – you know, obviously not to our advantage because they have their own agenda that they're pushing, or they're just simply not aware of what's going on, or they don't want to be aware of what's going on because, you know something, they make a lot of money and they want to keep on making a lot of money. Cody from San Francisco, and I'm sorry I called you Dave, Cody, on that. Well, you know, we brought up Thomas Paine, and, you know, Paine is one of our great writers, and He wrote Common Sense, which is one of the great political tracts in history, and he went broke. I mean, he was, in a sense, he was a blogger. I mean, he wrote one of the greatest political pieces ever, These Are the Times That Try Men's Souls, which was really instrumental, very much so, in keeping up our soldiers' morale. The term Sunshine Patriots is coined from that because he talked about how people will only stay patriots for the country when things are going good and not when things are going bad. And things are going very, very good. Now, what we have with the Republicans do is not, you know, with all the flag waving and stuff like that, that is not patriotism. That is nationalism. And, of course, that is the basis behind fascism. That's one of the aspects. And there are, and I forget the guy's name, but according to some person, there were 16 specific characteristics of fascism. And the United States is currently exhibiting each of these 16 characteristics. I don't have them right here at my fingertips. I could locate them, but I'm just going to wing it like I always do, because that's the kind of guy I am. You know what I'm saying to you? But one of them is a downgrading of labor power, an increase in corporate power, propaganda on the media, rigged elections. You know, the Nazis won, you know, a lot of seats quite legally, but they also pulled a lot of tricks to get certain seats. And once they got a certain amount of power, that's it. And I talked about this with another caller last week when I was doing the show, about how we're slowly but surely seeing the progression of how things are going on. We had our Reichstag. For those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, the Reichstag is the German government building, basically like our Senate and House of Representatives, the Capitol building. And during the 30s or whatever year where it was, dates are not my deal, it burned down. And Hitler blamed it on communists and terrorists and, you know, used it as an excuse to grab more power for the security of the nation, of course. And the people there were good Germans, and they went along with it. And I believe they were called the Enabling Acts, the things that gave him the authority as Chancellor of Germany to do things that were normally outside of Germany's constitution. Hang on a second. You know, I've been having a little thing in my throat all day today. Hang on a second. Let me get a drink. No, not liquor. I don't drink. This is just as bad for you, though. It's Diet Mountain Dew, which I know people tell me not to drink. I got to get some no-dose or some other caffeine pill so I can stop drinking that. At any rate, what was I saying? So we had our Reichstag. And when Bush signed the terrorist thing recently, and I loved watching him sign it. He signed it real fast and then slammed the pen down like, yes! Yes! End the foul! And, you know, our Reichstag basically was 9/11. I should have mentioned that. And he signed that thing, which basically now gives him the authority to basically lock up anybody he wants. Just because he says, or Dick Cheney, or Donald Rumsfeld says, well, this person is an enemy combatant. It is perfectly within that text. It is perfectly legal within the bounds of what he signed for someone to knock on the door right now. Right now. And come and take my ass away and throw me in jail. No lawyer. No nothing. Just toss me in jail. And unfortunately, a lot of Americans are acting like good little Germans. They're just going along with it. And I can understand that, because, to a certain extent, because we all have our lives we want to live. You know, we built this country so that we can concentrate on our individual lives. I mean, that's why the founders built this country. They built it so that we could not just make ourselves a fortune, you know, our own fortune, money-wise or whatever, but that we can say, we want to do a certain thing, we want to get married to such and such a person, or we want to go live in such and such a city. We want to have some control of our lives. They did it with that in mind. Even if some of them, like Alexander Hamilton, believed in a constitutional monarchy, what was important to them was what the people wanted. Okay? That was what was important to them. Yes, some of them had a different definition of who gets to vote and who doesn't get to vote. Cody mentioned James Madison, and strangely enough, James Madison was one of those guys who believed that you should invest the people with the trust, because they were talking about how to elect the president, and there was a small group of people, not a small group, but there were a group of people among the delegates who wanted to have the president chosen by a popular national vote, as opposed to the Electoral College, which is what we wound up with. And Madison was one of those who said, you know, it should be voted on by the people, because if you trust them, by and by they'll choose someone of particular character. And that's another issue that I'm going to get into sometime in the future, the whole electoral vote thing, because I think that is one of the biggest mistakes the Founding Fathers ever made. But I'm not going to talk about that right this minute. James Wilson of Pennsylvania was the most outspoken in favor of allowing the people to choose the president. And the way it really should have been set up was that the will of the people was represented in three different respects. The House of Representatives represents the will of the people on a regional level, congressional districts. The Senate represents the will of the people on a statewide level. And the president, chief executive, chief magistrate, whatever they wanted to call it at first, but the president, of course, was the name they chose in the end, represents the will of the people on a national level. And because of the Electoral College, it becomes easier to manipulate a few thousand votes in Florida or in Ohio. And I'm predicting in 2008 it's going to be California, in order to put your man into office, regardless of what the actual popular vote was. And if we had a national popular vote, it would be much more difficult for them to rig this election. Not impossible. So long as you've got these voting machines out there, and so long as no one is focused on getting rid of these machines and going back to a straightforward, low-tech, but accurate system for counting the votes, we no longer have a voice. And what they can do in combination with the way the press is reporting it is have a pretense of a democratic republic without actually having a democratic republic. Just like in the old communist states. They had a pretense of elections. They had elections there. They were shams. But they could sit there and say, see, we have elections just like, you know, America. And I understand that I didn't pay that much attention to it because I'm trying to avoid, you know, news from the South and stuff like that. But Kathy Cox, who was the person mainly responsible for getting the Diebold machines in Georgia, and I think Georgia was like the second state. I think Delaware was the first. Georgia was the second state to have these machines on a statewide basis throughout the entire state. Laid out tens of millions of dollars of the Georgia taxpayers' money to get these machines. And she lost her primary to Mark Taylor. She was running for governor. And she lost in the Democratic primary, probably because of her opposition. And in fact, I remember I went to a meeting, a town hall meeting that she had, that Kathy Cox was going to be at. Actually, it was held by a State Representative Stephanie Stuckey Burnfield, who was my state representative when I was living in Decatur. And Kathy Cox appeared, and a group called Defenders of Democracy had their people out there and trying to vigorously question her about the machines. And she knew we were coming, and she tried to make the case that we were crackpots. But bless his soul, Richard Searcy, who was the communications director for Representative Cynthia McKinney, then Representative Cynthia McKinney, well, she still is, but she won't be very much longer because she got voted out. He started questioning her. And, you know, maybe you can make the case that a few nutty citizens are crackpots, but not someone who speaks for a congresswoman, right? And she was overheard talking to her person when they were leaving. The person said to her, well, I think we just lost this election because of the way she handled that. She basically ducked and ran. She cut and ran. She wouldn't answer the questions. She kept giving Diebold talking points. And we got to go take our last break here. 15 more minutes, actually about 10 more minutes left in the show. We'll be back. If you want to call in, you'll get about 10 minutes in to talk. But otherwise, we're coming up on the last break here. And we'll be having Mark Levine coming up after that, after we go to this break. Okay, we'll be back with more on the Cup of Joe Radio Show here on the Head On Radio Network.
This is Bill O'Brien with a message that pretty much defines Concord University. It's from Emily Dickinson. There is no frigate like a book to take us lands away, nor any courses like a page of prancing poetry. This traverse may the poorest take without oppressive toll. How frugal is the chariot that bears a human soul. Respect for learning, a mission to deliver education that touches souls, consideration to what students can afford, career rewards that pay dividends far beyond the dollars earned. At Concord, we've never crossed that important line between the business of education and education as a business. The first is extremely serious. It changes lives and connects with the moral and the spiritual. We're good at that. The second is no less serious. It raises ethical concerns, however. We avoid that. Concord University, the frugal chariot that bears human souls. Call the Concord Admissions Office, 1-888-384-5249.
Are you still looking for weapons of mass destruction? Concerned about the future of the Supreme Court? You want to know how government bureaucrats are changing Social Security, overtime pay, or the environment? Maybe you just want to know if the president's lying to you, or when our troops in Iraq can finally come home. I'm Mark Levine. I've got the inside scoop. When you want to know what's going on inside the Beltway, you need a Beltway insider. Someone who's worked in the government and still has sources willing to give you all the news from Washington the government does not want you to know. So for lively debate, reasoned opinion, detailed analysis of history and policy, or just a point of view you don't hear expressed in the mainstream media, tune in to the Inside Scoop. Feel free to call in too. Agree or disagree. All opinions are welcome. It just might make you think. That's the Inside Scoop, weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 1 Central, 11 o'clock Pacific, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
I'm Alec Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Many dogs and cats spend endless days indoors staring at the wall, living for the moment when you will come home and tell them you love them, take them out, and make a fuss over them. Dogs and cats need physical exercise and mental stimulation, things to do and think about in order to be healthy and happy. Please set time aside for them and give them a real life and real love. For more information, please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals at 757-622-PETA or helpinganimals.com. That's helpinganimals.com.
You're listening to the Head On Radio Network.
Sorry about that. Cut in too quickly. We're back for the last 10 minutes or so here on the Cup of Joe radio show, and we've been talking about election fraud. Earlier in the show, we had author and activist Mark Crispin Miller, who's written some excellent books on the subject, and who has got his latest book called Fooled Again, which, again, I highly recommend you go to Amazon.com. It's too late to get last looks in, so if you're going to call, don't bother. It's 10 minutes left. Who we got? We got Inside Scoop with Mark Levine will be coming on after me. Tomorrow, Dr. Bill will be on his normal time slot, and I'm glad I was able to help out last week and be on all week. It was quite an experience doing the show every single day because, you know, like I keep saying, I do actually work for a living. So when on the days that I do the show, as soon as I finish with the show, I have to basically, you know, get dressed and get out of here so I can get to work on time. So when I say, again, that I am the voice of the working man, I am the voice of the working man. I think a lot of times, a lot of radio show hosts, not necessarily people on the horn, but there's a lot of radio show hosts who, you know, are well-educated and can talk about economic issues from a philosophical point of view. I talk about the issues from a point of view that you understand because I live through them just as you do. And I think it's very important for people to hear it from that. Because, you know, nobody talks for the working people really anymore. Very few people. Certainly none of the right-wingers are. The right-wingers, you know, the radio guys, they will try to turn you against each other. And they do a good job of it. Because I see how people are in the workplace. They'll start gossiping about different things and stuff like that, and they'll take sides and do this and that. But very rarely will you get a chance to get workers to work with each other. They're always fighting against each other. And, you know, those are the people who's like, well, I work harder than you, well, therefore I am superior to you. You do not work as hard as I do. And I get that a lot because, quite frankly, there are a lot of times where I don't want to say I slack off, but the truth of the matter is what happens is if I understand that I'm there to do a specific job, and I do that job to the best of my ability, and sometimes I do it a little too fast and I have some free time on my hands. And, you know, you get a lot of workplaces where, you know, they feel if you're not active every second of the day, that there's something wrong, that they're losing money somehow. And, you know, the truth of the matter is, for me anyway, I worked hard to get to that point where I can take a couple of minutes and take a breather. And I'm fortunate that I work at a place right now where they're not so rigid about that sort of thing. And quite frankly, I take very few breaks at work. Not because I don't want to, but because I'm a very focused person. I'm the type of person where I'm more worried about the work than I am about the job, if you understand the difference I mean in that. Because there's a lot of people who really are not interested in the quality of their work so long as they can keep their job. That's more important to them. I have a different focus. I like to do the best job that I can, but if there's nothing for me to do, then I don't like, you know, having busy work forced on me. And some bosses, they say that's an attitude problem. Well, you know what? In that case, I do have an attitude problem. But some of the bosses have an attitude problem, too, along those lines. But the problem is that we have in this country today, that working people are so busy dealing with the daily issues of their lives that they don't have the time to get as politically active as they need to. And they need to be. If we're going to overcome the massive amounts of election fraud that are going on with the Diebold machines or whatever other companies running, I mean, it's funny, by the way, that they're investigating these machines that have ties to Venezuela, because, you know, nobody in the government, current government leadership, likes to likes Hugo Chavez down in Venezuela. They're investigating that, but you know, try to get to investigate the fraud in our own machines produced by companies with obviously Republicans. The guy who said he was going to deliver Ohio to the Republican Party in 2004, and guess what? The guy who owned the machines, and that's what he did in 2004. And remember the cartoon on my blog, cupojoe.blogspot.com, cupojoe.blogspot.com. Go there and look at the Tom Tolles cartoon. Just scroll down a little bit. And that's exactly how I feel about this, because I see people and they're, oh my God, we're going to win so big, blah, 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 blah. Uh-uh. You got another thing coming, people. And like I keep saying, if you think I'm obnoxious now, you just wait. The election is a week from tomorrow. A week from tomorrow. And I can't wait to see what happens. Granted, I'm hoping that the Democrats pull off not just a huge upset, but an upset in big enough numbers so that the Republicans couldn't possibly challenge it. And that if that happens and the Democratic leadership takes over, they will do the things that need to be done in order to right the wrongs that have been happening. I want that to happen. You don't understand how much I want to be wrong on this. But I'm pretty sure I'm going to be right. I'm very certain that the Republicans are going to maintain their hold on Congress. And even if they lose it, their machine is still there. It's going to take a long time to wreck that machine. And you do it partly through legislation, but you also do it partly through getting out there and making your voice heard. And if it comes down to it, arm yourselves. I got my baseball bat right here. Yeah, it's not as good as a gun. I'm afraid to have a gun in the house, to be perfectly honest, because I know the statistics that more often than not, in fact, on huge numbers, people wind up getting shot with their own firearm than they do fending themselves off against a criminal. I don't want it to come down to that, people. I want to make it clear that I don't want it to come down to that. I'm fighting as hard as I possibly can to prevent that, as much as I can, and still be able to, you know, pay my bills and survive. I'm fighting for that. But if it comes down to it, I'm there in the streets. I got my bat ready. And I would actually enjoy taking that bat up and doing what needs to be done. Are we coming up on the end here? What do we got? We got 12:58 in 2 minutes. We got the news. We got the inside scoop with Mark Levine coming up. Another great show here on the Head On Radio Network. We have such an outstanding lineup here. Because after Mark Levine, we have, let me see if I got this right. We have Guy James after Mark Levine. Then we have Bruce Birch. And then we have Bob Kincaid from 7 to 10. We have 10 hours of solid live programming every day, Monday through Friday, here on the Head On Radio Network, and great stuff all weekend as well. We rock. We are the horn. We are conversation radio. We are the light of reason in an otherwise insane world. And tomorrow at this time slot, Dr. Bill O'Brien, another great host, will be back. In the meantime, I'm just waiting for the music here. so I can pull on out, because I gotta get ready to go to work myself. There we go. Mo Jones, the Cup of Joe song, and I want to thank the person who sent that to me some years back. For the Cup of Joe radio show, for the Head On Radio Network, I am Joe Vecchio. I will be back on Friday. Until then, get back to work.
I want a cup of Joe. I crave a plate of Dave. Open a jar of Joe. Don't put anything on. I'll chug a jug of George. I'll sip a mug of Doug with the creamer of Steve. How many more does that leave? Give me a pot of Scott. Heat up a pan of Stan. Throw in a handful of pink. That'll do. Every trick to the carafe of mash upon a tray of Ray. I'll lick a spoon of Shore. Do I need to go on? I want a cup of Joe.
This is the Quality News Network. The death of a U.S. Marine in Iraq over the weekend brings to 100 the number of U.S. soldiers, sailors, and Marines killed there during the month of October, and makes this the deadliest month for American servicemen since January of 2005. More than 2,800 Americans have died in Iraq since the war began 3.5 years ago. A bomb explosion today in Baghdad's Sadr city has killed at least 31 people and wounded more than 60. Among those killed were day laborers looking for work. An audit ordered by the Senate Armed Services Committee finds that 14,000 weapons bought by the U.S. government and delivered to the Iraqi military are unaccounted for. That's about 4% of the 370,000 weapons supplied to Iraqi troops. While Saddam Hussein's trial continues on charges of genocide against Iraq's Kurdish population, a verdict in his earlier trial on charges of killing Shiite villagers is expected this weekend, although the prosecutor says it may be delayed until after the U.S. elections on November 7th. National Security Advisor Stephen Hadley is now in Iraq on an unannounced visit to meet with U.S. military commanders and Iraqi government leaders. Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert says Israel plans to expand its offensive in the Gaza Strip to reduce the ability of Palestinians to fire rockets into Israel, but he says that offensive will not lead to an Israeli reoccupation. Pakistani troops have killed as many as 80 suspected al-Qaeda militants at a school near the Afghan border, believed by the Pakistani government to have been used as an al-Qaeda training center. The school was destroyed in the missile attack, and though denied by Pakistani military, local residents say those killed included a number of children. After 5 months of sit-ins in the central square of Oaxaca, Mexico, federal troops moved in over the weekend and reclaimed control. One demonstrator was killed. The protesters, who are demanding the resignation of the governor, whom they accuse of corruption, say they will regroup and they're vowing to take the city center back to continue the demonstrations. Investigators are now studying one of two black boxes from a Nigerian passenger jet that crashed in Abuja, Nigeria's capital city, on yesterday just after takeoff, killing 96 people. There were 9 survivors. The board of directors at Gallaudet University in Washington, D.C. has fired the incoming president, Jane Fernandez, following months of protests by both students and faculty over her appointment. The arson caused wildfire.